Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative. This is episode 104 of The Prerogative, and we finish off the month of October with the fabulous film Book of Life, as we finish Monster Mash Month!
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash!
He did the monster mash!
The monster mash!
It was a graveyard smash!
He did the mash!
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abodes to catch a joke from my electrodes.
He did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is I, your prom-tom host, Thomas Prom-tom Mattis, and I welcome you to another wonderful episode of The Prerogative. Like I said, this is episode 104. And yes, you heard me right. We are reviewing the newly recently released film, still in theaters, Book of Life. So, with that being said, I just want to say this right off the bat. There will be spoilers. So if you have not seen this movie, and you plan to, or you plan to see it when it comes out on DVD, and you don't want to be spoiled, or just hate spoilers in general, or whichever, you know, there will be spoilers. I just want to say that right now. So you have been warned. So if you continue to listen on after this, you have nobody to blame but yourself if you were spoiled by anything. Okay, capiche? Alright, we're good. Actually, it's a very funny kind of story, as it always is, to what I review, of how we got to reviewing Book of Life today, which is, again, the first time ever I'm reviewing something that's actually still in theaters. As I was looking at the stuff I wanted to do for Halloween, I'm like, I knew I wanted to go more mature, more dark, more mystery, more action, rather than the, you know, for the most part, fun, you know, even etchy stuff I did last year, you know, because quite frankly, you know, I did, for two separate episodes, I did each season of Rosario Vampire. I did Soul Eater, which is dark, but still very much more bright and much more Tim Burton. And, you know, I did High School DxD. And I think I did one other thing and I can't remember. Oh, that's right. I did a Mad Monster Party. So a lot more lighthearted, a lot more fun and positive. So I wanted to be more, a bit more dark, a bit more horror this year, and I've been given a lot of suggestions. I mean, mind you, I did want to start off with, I was going to go with Frankenweenie or Paranorman, and Paranorman was the one that was on Netflix, as it just so happened to be. Not that I didn't want to see it, but, you know, I wanted to review both, but that was the only one on Netflix. But I knew I wanted to do Hellsing, because Hellsing Ultimate was on Toonami. And I knew I wanted to do Devil May Cry, because again, after, I know there are a lot of people that want to see that on Toonami. And then it came to the, what would be the last show. And I looked through a lot of things. I thought about Trinity Blood. I knew I, for the most part, wanted to stay with sort of demon slash vampire theme. And I initially decided on Blood Plus. Well, unfortunately, Blood Plus is a 50-episode series. And if I had started watching at the beginning of the month, it probably wouldn't have been a problem. But because of things and how busy I got, and slow on deciding what to watch, yeah, I really didn't have time to watch a 50-episode series. I'm like, well, what can I watch instead? And I'm like, oh, well, Vampire Nights. Vampire Nights, it's in English, it's on Netflix and Hulu, and it's only 24 episodes. Surely I can do that. And I started watching it, but it was one of those things where, and I do plan on reviewing Vampire Nights at a future date at one point. I might even review it in February. Okay, scratch that. I forgot. February is Disney month, so maybe March. And anyhow, I'll review it in the same line where I'm doing a lot of stuff for girls. Let's face it, that is a shoujo show that where the target audience is a female one. But I still want to watch it, but it's like, you know, I'm not really feeling this, and I'm not watching this, I was 3 episodes in, and I'm like, again, I'm trying to do this all in a week, and I don't have the time. And it just so happened that on a Friday, I had work later in the afternoon, but because it was during a weekday, and, you know, I really didn't want to take the bus, so I went down early. I'm like, oh, you know what, I'll go to the movies, and I'll watch a movie. And I decided, you know what, I heard so much about Book of Life, I really want to see it. Part of it actually came, oddly enough, from hearing that Ice Cube was in the film. oddly enough, but like, I saw the visuals, I'm like, it's really good, and I really am interested in seeing it. So I decided, I'll go watch Book of Life at 10:30 in the morning on a Friday. Oddly enough, I wasn't the only one in the theater. there were a couple of there's like a mother and a son and a father and a daughter, and I think one more older woman. I mean 40s, 50s. So there were a couple of us at the theater, and we watched it, and I was just blown away and amazed at this film. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to review this. Now, I really don't have time to watch Vampire Nights. I wish I did. I do plan on doing Blood Plus and Vampire Nights at a later date. Maybe next October will be a month completely dedicated to the Blood Plus storyline, since, you know, there's Blood Plus, there's the original Blood, the Last Vampire animated movie, and then, of course, there's Blood Plus C, which I know is licensed by Funimation, and maybe by that time, the English dub will come out and it'll be available. So, you know, I had made the decision, you know what, I don't have time to watch this stuff. I do have time of this movie I've just watched. I think it'll be an interesting way to end Monster Mash month. Because, again, we don't get a lot of chance to go... I mean, even though Japan is multicultural in their anime, in particular with horror, it really falls into the realm of either, horror, Japanese tales and stuff like that, as one might see with, like, Blood the Last Vampire, Vampire Nights, or such. Or it's really much more gothic as it is with, like, a Hellsing. Where it's more of that traditional European style of horror. You really don't get to see, like, Mexican and African and all these other cultures. So I think that's another thing that brings us to light is, you know, again, this is more of a look at the Mexican culture, which means I have to give forewarning. I'm going to butcher some people's names. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. Anybody who's heard me do any of my podcasts before knows that I'm pretty much suck at names, regardless of what language, whether it's English, Japanese, or the such. So, forewarning, I'm probably going to butcher some names. That being said, Guillermo del Toro, and again, fuck. See, I've already started off the bat. Let's see. I'm going to go up. Let's see. Where is his name? So I can Guillermo del Toro, and I probably said it wrong again, but he helped produce the film. The director was Jorge Gutierrez, originally this was co-opted by DreamWorks in 2007, but it never went beyond development, apparently because of creative differences, as I'm reading, and your quotation, and that is interview on Cartoon Brew with Jorge Gutierrez. So, yeah, this movie had a lot of things to go through before it got developed. But Del Toro, who again, you know, Pacific Rim, Hellboy, The Orphanage, I'm blanking on the name of his Spanish horror film, which are brilliant. I've not seen them, but I just from the visuals, I know they're brilliant. So, and then a lot of big names, as we'll get to. So this film had a lot going for it, and personally, it did not disappoint. We're going to have fun today. We're going to have fun talking about music. We're going to have a whole lot of fun talking about animation. We're going to have fun talking about the acting, and we're going to get into it when we talk about story, because, once again, film critics piss me the fuck off. Because they can't go a week without doing that. So let's get into our story. The Book of Life follows basically a bet between two gods. La Nurta, the ruler of the land of Remembered, and the wife of the other god, Zilibaba, ruler of the land of the Forgotten, which is this desolate place where the Forgotten go. Who has nobody to remember them. And he's tired of ruling that land, and he wants to rule the land of Remembered with his big, vibrant party all the time. And so they make a bet. And they basically make this bet. They see these three children, Maldonado, Maria, and Joaquin. And they basically say, choose which boy will win fair Maria's heart. La Nurta picks Manolo. Fuck! It's gonna be like this all very long. Sanchez! Mr. Sanchez, we'll call him. Manolo, give me. I had to spill it out for a second there. Manolo. And then Zilibaba chooses young Joaquin. Maruta gives Manolo her blessing and tells him to always follow his heart. While Zilibaba tries to, you know, get the advantage by giving young Joaquin a little medal that makes him invulnerable to pain and damage and basically guarantees that he'll be a hero. After quite a mess that Maria poses, where she lets animals that are about to be slaughtered free, enraging her father, the general of the town, she's sent away at a nunnery. About 10, 15 years later, she returns, and of course, Manolo and Joaquin fight for her heart, with Manolo actually starting to come out on top, which frightens Zilibaba to the point to where he fools him into thinking that a snake accidentally kills Maria and asks to be killed too, when it really didn't. She's awoken, of course, by the kiss of Joaquin, the hero. and he has to travel through the land of the dead to find a way back to Maria. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Book of Life.
I will stay by you, even when we fall. I will be the rock that holds you up and lifts you high so you stand tall. I won't let you go, no one can take your place. Oh, a couple fights and lonely nights don't make you right to let it go to waste. And I won't let you fall.
Do with music, and in this case we start off with songs. This movie takes the, what I like to call the Shrek approach to songs, and I mean, there's the score and then there's the songs, and in this case, you know, like, you know, in Shrek you have, darn it, I'm blanking on their names, and they're one of my favorite bands, but you know how they did I'm a Believer, Smash Mouth. I had to think about them for a second. But how Smash Mouth did, I'm a Believer, and, you had all of those sort of pop songs redone for Shrek, and Shrek 2 as well. Sort of the same thing here. In this case, it's a lot of folk music, and, you know, you have a version of Mumford and songs being sung, among other things. And you also have some, you know, Mexican folk music here. But like the American folk music, the twist here, again, it's done sort of Spanish and Mexican style to fit the overall theme and the landscape and the location that these songs are taking place. And I thought they were done extremely well. I don't have a problem with the Shrek style of music. You may think that I only like what Disney does, but, you know, I don't have a problem with it when it's done right. I just don't think it's as good as when it's like original songs. But taking existing songs and turning them into, you know, the way I use, can be done right and can be good and can be just as good as creating original music. And I think it's done very well here. Each song, one song fits. My favorite is the apology song, you know, because it's such an essential part to that part of the movie succeeding. And it works so well. The apology song, especially where Milano in basically does to go over quickly his plot, which I'm sure we'll get to when we get to story. But, you know, he's this bullfighter. He comes from a family of bullfighters, but he believes that he doesn't have to kill the bull, which is blasphemy. Who doesn't kill the bull? And part of his final challenge to defeat the evil god is that he has to basically face all the bulls that have been slaughtered by his family over the years. I believe it's by his family. It could be by all the bulls that have been slaughtered forever, but I do believe it's by his family. And he's fighting, he's not conquering, and he finally says, you know, I'm just saying, and I'm going to apologize to this bull. Of course, because the whole idea is that his fear was facing the bull, but his real fear was his father not acknowledging him. And it just so happened, you know, in the movie, his father at that time just happens to get killed by the main antagonist, villain, who is really the weakest part of this film, in a large part. But it happens to see it. And so that song works very well in that scene as in telling that story. And it is a very essential part of telling the story of Manolo's feelings. So I thought the songs overall worked very well. I love the ending theme. I love the opening theme. So the opening credits, ending credits, I thought worked very well. As for the overall score, I thought it was very well done. I love the thematic use of Mexican instruments, the mandolin, the guitar, the haracas, you know, you could tell the different, you know, if you've heard Mexican instruments, you can hear each of them, the shakers and everything, and the drums and everything, Mexican drums and the like. Our piano done extremely well. So I thought the score was very well done. There was a great atmospheric music throughout the film that I thought was very well done. Interesting enough, in those wonderful reviewers and critics I talked about earlier who had pissed me off, not one of them really talked about the music. Because, of course, once again, music is a film's bitch that nobody talks about. Unless it's, like, grandiose and, like, hits you in the face. But here, I thought it was extremely well done. And combined, again, with that sort of Shrek style of doing music, of taking pop culture songs and giving a little twist to fit the movie, it's done extremely well. So, overall, I thought the music was extremely well done. With that, let's move to what is by far the highlight of this film. And that is the animation. Now, you know how I have, like, railed on movies like Frozen for their CG, how their CG, it, you know, they're trying to basically use CG as a replacement for hand-drawn. If you remember my criticism, that you remember part of that reason for that criticism is I want CG to be CG. I want CG to do something that can't be done in hand-drawn. Book of Life is a perfect example of using CG to do something that hand-drawn can't. Because of the style of this film. Now, mind you, you have the opening, which is pretty interesting, and mind you, matches the art style, which is its purpose, and extremely well done. I mean, the curves on Mary Beth got, what a shock. I'm talking about the curves of Mary Beth. Christina Applegate, thank you for my check of the year. But she does, mind you, I'm not making fun. I mean, she's this big name. She's brought in really for this one little part. I'm guessing because the, I'll sit here and say that there's a twist. Not really a twist, but it's like, you know what, I really should have seen this. And like, and half of them, like, they're these people, aren't they? And it's like, I'm not surprised, but you know what, they did a great job of really keeping the mystery going. We'll get to that when we get to the story. But in the film, it reminded me a lot of Little Big Planet, in a way. Not that it was, like, 2D flat, but, like, in particular, when they're initially telling the story and there's a little part, that kind of reminded me a Little Big Planet. I wouldn't be surprised if that had some inspiration on the style as well. But, you know, again, these characters, whether they would be dead or not, being these, basically these versions of Mexican dolls, where, and you, to the point to where you see the joint and you see the screw and everything, and it's as if these dolls are alive. And, you know, again, sort of the skin looking smooth, yet just a bit wooden, so they feel there's this breath of life inside the wood that you can feel. And then, you know, the overall landscape and everything done is sort of in this wood and this feel. It's really just brilliant. And again, with the face, and again, Manello being the main protagonist has a bit more rounded edge, whereas Joaquin is, you know, has more squareness to him. And again, they look like these dolls. And it brought to life. And it's just a brilliant use of the CG art style. Going into characters, and as I had just gotten to, I love Manolo's design and everything. And you know, you had the broad shoulders and using these very aesthetic and, I'm trying to think of the word. And I want to think of the word because it was best described my art drawings when I was in art class. But again, using just squareness and, oh god, I'm out blanking on a name I want to use. But again, using simpleness, you know, simplicity, and, you know, going for the basic outline. You know, again, Maria has curves, and she has curves in all the right places. Again, both Joaquin and Manello being male, you know, again, the doll's sort of classic male shape. And again, I think what people misunderstand, again, this is a perfect example of a movie that is made for everyone, and yet I think a lot of critics are punishing it by judging it as a kid's movie. But it's not a kid's movie, it's a movie for everyone. And it's using... Damn, I wish I could remember that word, because I really want to talk about it. But anyways, you know, again, using the basic shapes of what would be acknowledged as male. And maybe this is where some of the criticism come from, and which angers me immensely, because it's like... It's art. It frustrates me. I think personally, the character designs are wonderful. I think too many people are putting too much politics into the design. Because again, they want to breed it as a kids movie. This is a movie for everyone, and it's about the art. And I'm sorry, art transcends what we want our kids to believe, because they should be learning what the art means. The aesthetics of it, and the surrealistic designs. I'm going to be caught on that word for the rest of my damn life. I'm going to think of it in a minute, like, fuck! So, yeah, I really did like all the character designs. I love the design of the gods. I thought that was done extremely well. You know, you had La Muerta with the candles and candy all around her, you know, which I thought was great. It's a Baba with sort of the more dark designs being all black and the skeletons and everything. And then, again, just all the other little character designs and the way they worked and sort of the cubist. And really, that's another way to sort of describe it is you can feel the influence on artistic surrealism like cubism, designs taken from, you know, Pablo Picasso and Salvador Dali within the art. There's much more to the art than, oh, we're doing these dolls, which again, they were, but there's all these different influences onto it that are just, oh, just so wonderful to look at. You know, you have the big secondary main antagonist, Chikao, the leader of the group of bandits, being this big burly guy with, you know, this claw like winch arm and everything, and it just also feels so creative and wonderful to it. I very much enjoyed it. The one that was so out of place was the candle maker, but I think it works personally because it's so different from the rest of what everybody is. It's so full of life. Mostly because he's supposed to basically be a cloud. He's supposed to be made sort of a wax and almost like a cloud. And so he is fluffy. He is vastly different from the other designs and the other characters that seemingly are wood brought to life. So I love that textorial difference there that I think works extremely well. I think the action scenes are done extremely well as well. Really well done. All the action in this movie, you know, has a great flow to it. It feels very organic. And it feels fun. So I thought the action animation, you know, it's not the most popular or I should say the most sexy to talk about in this film, because the action, while important, it's not the most important. There's more of the visual elements, and you find yourself getting lost, and you can sometimes forget, oh, there's an action scene going on. But again, the movement of whether that be an action, a fight scene, or the character getting thrown over here, everything flows perfectly. It never feels just opposed to, you know, being clunky or static or just like, no, we're moving dolls. It all feels organic. There feels like these things are living and breathing. In particular, the final fight scene on top of the tower where Maria and Manolo are fighting Chikao, I thought was done extremely well, and I love the movement of the camera alongside that. And that's another thing, the camera movement I thought was done extremely well done throughout this film. Last but not least is backgrounds and special effects. And I thought the backgrounds were done wonderfully, the use of shadow and everything. It really made it, gave you this sort of like stage to feel. And I mean, like, you know, sort of the lights and everything, like, this is on a stage, and yet it all feels so real. And yet, again, matching the art as far as the special effects are concerned, really hard to do and done extremely well here. And then, of course, the backgrounds, the locations. Location, location, location. The village is amazing to look at. The bull ring in there, amazing to look at. But then you get to the Land of the Remembered, and oh my god, it is this absolutely fantastic, amazing place. And it just blows my mind how beautiful the backgrounds are in this movie. Even the Land of the Forgotten has its own unique, just artistic wonder to it that amazes you. You know, it seems like, well, they're going to stay in this one place, and then the film jumps right into, okay, now we're in the Land of the Dead. And they don't do it so jarring that it jars you out of place, but it's like this pop of color and everything. It's like wonderful to see. The backgrounds and the locations used in this film are done extremely well and are absolutely amazing. And again, the way they seem as if they're carved out of wood, and there's this craftsmanship and there's soul. You know, I talk about the breath of life, and, you know, Book of Life, I think you have all this life that's in the characters, all the life that's in the landscape and the locations. Yet you can feel the soul within this film. This is what CG can do that hand-drawn can't. And I wish more films would do this. Well, with that being said, it's time for us to take a break. And I'm going to play a couple promos of some people you really should listen to. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I've been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I've been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and from there you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. an unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
To record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
twotruefreaks.com. Hey Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Yeah, play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Intentional freak!
Two!
Belong in the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,300.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it! Ow!
Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Yeah, goddamn lucky to kill him.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on,
let's
go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Surely it's you.
I say shut up! It's a man!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with acting, which means it's time to go over our cast list. So, warning, 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 I am going to fuck up some names. I really am going to try. So, let's get this painfulness over with. We have Diego Luna as Manolo Sanchez. With Emilia Bastine Buffard as the young Manolo earlier in the film. Zoe Saldana, who's being absolutely huge. You know, she was the main female lead in Avatar. She was Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy. Let me bring her up. She's Uhura and Star Trek Into the Darkness. She was the very fun role in Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl as Anna Maria. She's building a very impressive film career, quite frankly. But she plays Maria Posada with Genesis Ochala as young Maria. Channing Tatum as Joaquin, the self-proclaimed hero, with Alicia Garza as young Joaquin. Ron Perlman, because goddammit, it would not be a Del Toro produced or directed film without Ron Perlman being a part of it some part, as Zilbaba. Kate Del Castillo as Lirmuta. Christina Applegate as Mary Beth. Ice Cube as, you know, by the way, Mary Beth is the museum tour guide, but Ice Cube as the Candle Maker. Hector Elizondo as Carlos Sanchez, Manolo Father. Danny Trejo as Skeleton Luis, Manolo's deceased grandfather. Carlos Alziki as General Posada. Anna Dele Ruiz as Carmen Sanchez, Manolo's deceased mother. Placido Domingo as Skeleton Jorge, Manolo's deceased great-grandfather. Jorge R. Gutierrez as Skeleton Carmelo. Eugenio Debes as Chato. Gabriel Iglesias as Pepe Rodriguez. Dan Navarro as Chacal, the large leader of a group of bandits. Miguel Sandoval as the Land of the Remembrant Captain. Gray DeLuise as Grandma Sanchez, who has one of the best lines in the movie, like, it's Manolo's great-grandmother who's also living then dies later in her film, going like, you know, Ma, did you get killed by the bandits? No, cholesterol. Ricardo Sanchez as Pablo Rodriguez. Cheech Martin as Pablo Rodriguez. Eric Bazad as Father Domingo. Aaron Warren and Thomas Tom. Troy Evans as Old Man Hemingway. Guillermo del Toro as the Land of the Remembrance Captain's wife, which begs to be laugh, and Brad Booker as the conductor. Quite simply, I love this cast. I thought it was an extremely well done cast. I thought the three main leads did an extremely well job. Well done job. Delgado Luno had just, I thought, a great performance. Same with Zoe Saldana. Both of them as sort of the two big main protagonists. Oh, and now you also Channing Tatum, because I thought he did a wonderful job. I think Tatum is a very underestimated actor. I've really not seen anything I've absolutely hated him or thought he was really bad in. I think he has great range, and here's, I think, another example of it as well. You know, he's playing a, you know, a sort of tunic stereotype, and it's done extremely well, and yet there's little nuances that they threw in there and that he throws in there with the acting that I think are done extremely well, little pauses in there that doesn't make him, like, you absolutely hate him, like, you completely understand where he's coming from, and it's just a matter of he's a good person doing things the wrong way. And I thought Tatum did a great job of portraying that. Zoe did a wonderful job of playing this very headstrong and very wonderful female protagonist. It's like, I get instant Belle vibes off her, the way she played her. And it was just great. You know, you can write a female character to be strong and independent in all the ways he did her, but unless you get a great performance to go along with that to portray that, it doesn't work. And Zoe did a wonderful job of portraying that within Maria. And, you know, just a lot of great emotion within the character. And then Diego as Manolo, again, a great job to in a way giving him sort of that voice of that sort of Mexican soap opera heartthrob, which I thought worked very well for the character as well. And I thought he showed great range in the different varying emotions that Diego shows. And then you have the gods. And I'll throw Christina Applegate in there, because basically she is La Muta, who's posing as a tour guide, telling these kids, hey, this is what happens. What is happening. But I thought all three gods did a wonderful job. Ron Perlman is Ron effing Perlman. Of course he's going to do a great job. And he has that great deep voice that works so well. I love Kate Del Castillo in it. Oh my god, oh god, her voice is so sexy and wonderful. And I love every time her character's on screen. And then Ice Cube, apparently this is his first sort of animated voice role. You know what? I thought he did an okay job. You know, again, it added this different texture to the character that was, or I should say, the voice added to the fact that the character was supposed to be this different texture from all the rest. And I think it really also shows Ice Cube's range as an actor. He did a terrific job on this. You really felt the fun coming from him, the emotion. It didn't feel like he was just doing this for a paycheck. He really put effort into it, and you could really hear it. And mind you, all the rest of the voice cast did a wonderful job. Even the characters that people who are just brought in there for a little small role. You have Danny Trejo, who's become very big, and he has this little small role as Luis, and he does a good job with it. He's meant for comedy, does it perfectly. I love sort of the guest spots of like Gabriel Iglesias and Cheech Martin here. As you, it's a Mexican, you know, film. We're bringing in Cheech. But they had the comedy bits and they did them extremely well. You know, they brought in a lot of, you know, Mexican and Mexican American actors for this film, and everybody I thought did an extremely well job. And even, you know, to the point to where I'll sit here and say this. This is one of those very few films where they take, you know, I've talked about it before, that Scott McNeil said, how many names can we put on the box? How many big names can we put on the box? And while certainly this is, there's a lot of big names in this film, and I wonder how they're going to get them all in the freaking box. But at the same point in time, everybody here did a great job. So I don't mind it in this film, because everybody here put in the effort and everybody here did a wonderful job. It's not like some films to where they get all these big names and the film sucks. And you feel like, wow, they're really all doing this for a paycheck. There's not one person in this film who I felt like they were doing this as a paycheck. They felt there was a soul, there was emotion. I loved everybody in this film. So I thought the voice cast did a tremendous job. With that, let's move on to story. And so again, warning spoilers. Though if you've made it this far, you should know that by now. You know, the plot is, again, very simple. You know, you have the gods using humans to play their games. In this case, it's which one of their champions will the girl pick? You know, will she pick the unstoppable manly force, or will she pick the more sensitive human aspect of, you know, love and compassion? And they showcase both sides of Kruma, and that's what I think also makes it work as well, is that they showcase both characters extremely well. You know, Joaquin, in a way, he, while a protagonist, he's also an antagonist in a way, in the fact that, you know, he's, in a way, he's Gaston, but he's Gaston not as a bad guy, but as somewhere in the middle. Someone who's a bit more understanding than what Gaston is. But he's like, he's stereotypical, like, I'm the champion, I'm the hero, and I'm, you know, in any other situation in most of society, he's the guy that society tells girls, you should marry that guy. That's who's going to set you for life. That's who's going to make you happy. But Diego is what her heart is telling her is going to make her happy and why she ends up with him. And it leads to this whole big thing of being who you are. Part of the reason she falls in love with him is because Diego is able to be who he is. Joaquin is never who he is. He's so focused on basically being his father that he takes this medal that makes him invulnerable and, you know, basically go out and to be his father, but he's never him. And Maria is able to see that. They do a great... There's a little subtlety there to where they sort of can make you understand that Maria can tell who's being fake and who's not. You know, when, you know, point when he's talking about his medals. And she's like, wow, he's so fake. It's like, I cannot believe. To the point to where when it first is that she married him, it's like, really? You want me to marry him? I'm just back from the nunnery and this is what you're doing to me. As opposed to Diego, to where, you know, he feels more authentic. They do a great job of portraying that throughout the film. And then that sort of classic, almost Romeo and Juliet-esque-ness to it, to where, and which again also goes back to a Greek mythology, to where the hero is tricked. The hero thinks that he's committed some great sin, and now he must go on a journey to right his wrong. So this plot takes from a lot of classic literature, and this plot has a lot of deepness to it that is really, I think, I hope a lot of people see. And again, that journey to basically discover himself and remember just who the hell he is, which is a big theme of being who you are. You know, the Day of the Dead is not just a day to remember those who have passed on, but to remember ourselves in a way. To, you know, remember who we are and to be proud of who we are. And to be proud of our familia. So, in that sense, it kept sort of the soul aspect of what Day of the Dead was and really celebrated the ideas of the Day of the Dead, of remembering our family and in turn remembering ourselves and remembering who we are and being proud of who we are by being proud of our familia that had passed away. The more positive aspect of it, as opposed to, I mean, even though, yes, I know Halloween is a... It is positive here in the States as well with candy and trick-or-treating and everything. But, you know, the way we have all these horror things that come on and like, ooh, we're scared of the dead. So I thought the main plot and the main theme of being who you are was portrayed very well. And again, I love the romantic. And maybe, you know, I think this is where this criticism of them calling this plot formulaic comes from. Because it's the guy and the girl and they fall in love and they end up getting together at the end. To which I say, yeah, what? What? What do you have a problem with? Really? You have a problem with this? I mean, oh my god, this pisses me the hell off. It pisses me the hell off. I think the romantic aspect is done wonderfully. They portray the story of these two characters falling in love. You know, it doesn't feel like it's happening over the point of a day. You know, yes, you have this whole thing to where she comes back and in the process of a day they serenade and, you know, he ends up getting dead and having to go on the journey. But it's a love that has been growing since she left when they were children. So it's not like they were only given a day to fall in love. It's that love has always been there, and it's been fostering for years, and we're seeing the tail end of it. And I thought it was done extremely well done. Like I said, another great aspect to this is, again, the hero's journey. In particular, in the land of the remembered and the land of the forgotten. And ultimately, that final... that final task of having to defeat all the bulls that his family has defeated. Again, it's a classic Greek literature story in its own way. That's a lot of depth to this story. And I love the little twist of here, you know, this is where it fits in with the theme of being yourself, to where he, you know, he's fighting the bull and he can't overcome it. It grows big and it's going to run him over, and he starts serenading it and going, and he apologizes. I'm like, I am sorry, you did not deserve this. This is the sorrow of our family. We should not be killing the bull. Again, becoming who he is. And it leads to him overcoming his real fear of his familia acknowledging him and loving him. You know, and more importantly, the respect of his father. Because that's, like I said, that was his whole fear, which I thought was done extremely well done, was it wasn't facing the bull. It was that his father would not respect him for being who he was. Because he wasn't the traditional bullfighter who... And there's sort of a deeper, also, little message here. I love that Del Toro and them are doing about bullfighting, in a way. It's a little political message here that I very much enjoy. Because I think it's something... I think bullfighting is a wonderful spectator sport that needs to evolve. Because it is a dance. It basically, it's a show where it's a dance between the bullfighter and the bull. To where the bull does not need to die. And there's sort of a great little political message, like, this is a great tradition of ours that it's going to go away unless we keep it alive this way. So there's a little political message there that I actually like, because it's very, very subtle. And only those that would, you know about what's going on with bullfighting would know it. So it's not like something that's being forced upon the general public. It's for, like, the small amount of people that may know the story. You see, like, there's a little political message there being put there. And I love those little things. I love those little nuggets of information. But again, here with the classic Greek story of he has to overcome his fears by acknowledging his own wrongs. And in this case, acknowledging the wrongs of his family. And it leads to him being able to gain his life back and go up and save the day. And then, of course, that final action scene is just wonderful. And I love that line, like, it's the day of the dead, so we can be lenient. And so we're going to bring the dead, the Santazes, back to help fight the fight. And it's just, again, great comedy. They went to the Ron Clements and John Musker school of, comedy. And then, for that point, that's a great segue into the final talking point, which is the comedy. I love the comedy throughout. There's so many different forms. There's smart comedy. There's stupid comedy. There's potty comedy. You know, the two big ones in this case being, you know, they're going, like, here are the tales of that are make up Mexico, and there's the tale of independence. There's the tale of El Chupacabra, and you see El Chupacabra eating a goat and their skeleton remain, and the goat on the other side sees this and shits itself. Like, did we just show a goat shitting itself in a family movie? I like this film already. To the point, and also the point that we're showing, like, numerous farm animals, like, peeing all over the place. Like, when did potty humor become so popular? And I know some people hate that, mind you. But it's not done so constantly. There's really only those two places. And it's fun. But the comedy's been well done. Again, like I said, you know, you see it in the previews, or see a part of it, where, you know, Cheech Martin, Gabriel Iglesias, and the other gentleman, you know, they have a little thing on, you know, Eddie, like, we're all going to serenade the senorita. You've got what I need. And you say you're just a friend. But you say you're just a friend. Oh, baby, you. And then he gets hit by something. You know, when in doubt, hit the asshole. And then Gabriel Gasco goes, yeah, you pop my body. Gets rich and rolls. And then the next guy sings one verse before. He goes to the inferno and gets it. I loved it. It's one of my favorite jokes in the movie. It just works so well. And then there's just all this other little comedy throughout the series that works extremely well. I mean, I gotta go back to the potty humor. You know, there's a point where they're going through the lead and this little boy's going, "Churros! Churros! $1! Bird flying overhead, bird poops, and his poop lands on the churro. He looks at it. "Frosted churros! $1! Frosted churros! $1! Like, oh my god. But we really just have that in this film. I want to hate it, but I have to give Phil props for, you know, we know this is going to be funny, so we're going to do it. So, one thing I love about all the comedy is they weren't afraid. There are sometimes when you're watching a movie and you have comedy, there's a movie or a series where they're trying to be funny, but they don't really commit to the joke because they're afraid of being offensive. And then there are the shows and the movies to where they don't give a damn if you're offended by the joke. They're going to just do what they knew. You know, it's the point to where you can have to tell, like, well, if this makes us laugh, obviously it has to make other people laugh. And they commit to the joke. And they do a great job of committing to their jokes. And they don't overfill this film with jokes, but they give enough there for the lighthearted tone. And, you know, when it came too serious, it cuts that tension up to make it more enjoyable and more digestible. Final thoughts. I love this film. This is a great film. This is one of the best animated films I've seen in a long time. It's certainly one of the best CG animated films I've seen in a long time. And the biggest reason for that is because, unlike other shows, you know, Planes, got Kung Fu Panda, all these movies are basically, you know, we're CG and we're using CG to replace hand-drawn animation. This is really like Paranorman, like Frankenweenie. Though that was, you know, well, those shows were, they use CG, but in the case of alongside with stop motion. As I know people are trying to hopefully able do more with hand-drawn animation. But here, you really see an animated film where it can only be done in CG. I cannot see this being done to the same success as far as artistically hand-drawn. This film showcased how you infuse the unique soul that CG has into a film. Because this film, what makes it work most of all, is that it has soul. That magical thing I always talk about that I say CG can't replicate. Maybe I should be more precise and sit here and saying that what it can't replicate is CG can't replicate the type of soul that hand-drawn animation does. But it does have its own version of soul. And you see it in this film. This is the CG soul. And if we would have more films that would take advantage of this, we could see some wonderful CG animated films in the future. But, you know, more like we're going to get a lot more films where it's, hey, we're using CG to basically, in replacement of hand-drawn because, you know, we're going to continue to lie that hand-drawn animation is more expensive. One more final thought, and I guess this is my political thing of the issue, is, mind you, in preparation for this, I was reading a lot of the critics. My God, some of these critics have pissed me. There have been people calling this film formulaic. And this pisses me off. Because I'm going to call people out on this right now. They're calling it formulaic because the guy ends up with a girl. And because the girl doesn't either throw the last punch or slash sacrifice herself. And somehow that makes it formulaic. No, it's not. I'm sick and tired of this. You know, it has to be the girl or the gay guy. You know, it can't be a straight couple anymore. This is all fucking bullshit. You know, here's a simple fact. If it was so simple, if making a film was so formulaic and so simple, everybody would be doing it and every film would be successful. Except that they aren't. Because films aren't formulaic. Yes, there are certain formulas to certain stories and everything, but to make a film good, there are certain tangibles that you must do, which this film does, that makes it not formulaic. And one thing that doesn't make a film formulaic is guy falling in love with girl, girl falling in love with guy, and then ending up together at the end. I'm sick and tired of us punishing people and criticizing people for telling the story of a guy and a girl falling in love and being together. I'm really sick and tired of it. Yes, I get that there are, I guess, young gay men and young lesbian women. But you know what? The point is that these characters are supposed to be able to represent everybody. Diego and Maria can represent a gay couple. They can represent a lesbian couple. They can represent tons of different types of people. Just because they look a certain way and are a certain way doesn't mean that they're only representing one group of people. And I think people recognize that. But there are people trying to push a political issue that they only represent one group of people and they're outsizing a different group of people. It pisses me off. So, by far, the one thing I'll disagree with, every reviewer said this. This film is far from formulaic. This film is brilliant. This film takes a lot of chances. And you know what? Those chances succeed. They're a lot more successful with their chances than I think Frozen is. In fact, I'll sit here and say this. This film is way, way better than Frozen. It's miles better than Frozen. And I think in every conceivable section. I think the acting is better. I think the music is better because the music is not disjointed like Frozen. You know, the music here is, you know, it knows what it is and there's a follow theme and it sticks with it. As opposed to Frozen, which doesn't know if it wants to be a Broadway piece or pop culture music. The animation is, my God, brilliant. And yeah, I'm saying it. The animation in Book of Life is better than the animation in Frozen. Because like I said, this is something that can only be done in CG. Frozen could have been done in hand-drawn. And I'm sorry, the story, I'm going to quote CinemaSins here, because they said it perfectly. Problem with Frozen's story is that it spends so much time trying to pull the rug out from under you that it sort of forgets to do a concrete story. Here, Book of Life focuses on a concrete story while still taking chances and succeeds. And it's fun, and at the end of the day, you've had such a fun time watching this movie that you want to rewind it and watch it again, and I can't wait for this movie to come out on DVD and Blu-ray because it is just gorgeous and I can't wait to watch it again. So at the end of the day, there are some criticisms I think are fair. I think the secondary antagonist, the bandit leader, is really kind of weak and plain. As much as I enjoy the music for what it is, there's no real song that's just that. It's like, oh my God, smash out hit like Frozen. Or I said for like Let It Go or something like that. That's like gotta be playing on the radio forever. But at the end of the day, you know what this movie is? This movie is the Rey Mysterio of CG animation. This is the ultimate underdog who has risen up to become what I believe to be one of the great champions of CG animation. Because this film is beautiful, it's a well-done story, and there's so much soul that it just fills your heart with happiness. So I give Book of Life a 4.75 out of 5. I can't give it a perfect score because there are little things here and there, but they're so nitpick. You know, it's a 4.75 out of 5 for me for Book of Life. So I highly suggest, while still in theaters, go see Book of Life. And when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray, pick it up. So that is it for this episode of Tom's prerogative. I hope you enjoyed as we finished off Monster Mash Month. We'll be going into November, and I already have some things lined up. I have some things half finished. In fact, I already have next week's episode as far as watching material finished. And I can't wait to talk about it. As the second season, I think, is starting to wind down. We'll get to that in a moment. But, so, I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments for today's episode or anything, we always love hearing from you. We always love hearing comments, and we always want to read your comments. So, remember, there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can always leave us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find at www.stitcher.com and search for the Absolution Network. Also, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for the Absolution Network on Facebook. Like I said, leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the posts that are on the site for this show, which you can find at, or this episode, mind you, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, also remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes Chin Tiger Curl and John Ramos, along with the anime cast, and of course, my other podcast, CM Jews Wrestling Review, and Tom's Top 10. Also, remember to check out Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast over at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcasting network, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com, which features Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Jim Bale and Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, Spectacular Webs, and CM Juice Comic Book Crazy, along with Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast at my Tokyo SOS podcasting site, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And along with all that, make sure you go to our sidebar and check out all our friends on the sidebar. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Longbox, Longwood from Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas and Spider-Man, Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher, the Major Spoilers podcast, Spidey Dude in the Clone Saga Chronicles, and of course, Scott Gardner and the 22 Freaky Podcasting Network, along with many others on the sidebar. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, it's November. And as we start getting ready for Thanksgiving, I'm going to take a look at, well, seriously, initially I was planning on reviewing back in September as episode 101. But things got in the way, and then it was October, and we started with Paranorman. So, what series is this? Well, a little series that took the world by storm with its wonderful music and showcasing that a little fan animator who did a little series called Dead Fantasy was not some dumb lucky idiot. Somebody who really knows how to do it and doing great animation. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we review the phenomenon that shows on Crunchyroll from Rooster Teeth and the makers of Red vs. Blue. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we review Ruby. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation. Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.